This is The Stateless Man for the pursuit of individual liberty beyond arbitrary borders, oppressive governments, and myths of national obligations. If you value liberty and are willing to migrate and vote with your feet, you've come to the right place.
Welcome to The Stateless Man. I'm broadcasting live from Fusa Gasuga in Colombia, just south of Bogota. And the sponsor of this hour is the International TEFL Academy. Go to radioita.com if you want to teach abroad. They'll get you mentored in terms of certification and lined up with fitting employment prospects. That's radioita.com, and they've got a $50 discount for Stateless Man listeners if you just mention the show. So we have, a ton to discuss this week in the Facebook page. I really appreciate the people who are involved there. It's at facebook.com/thestatelessman. It's generating plenty of discussion for the show, and it's assisting me with deciding what topics to discuss. So if you haven't already been there, get onto it. And one of the topics that came up this week was the fact that in Canada, government compensation is not publicly available, which I thought was crazy. And one of the conservative party members, I can't remember where he's from, I'll get that one up during the break, but he introduced a bill that anyone earning more than, I think, $180,000 or something like that, so at least the most highly compensated workers in the government sector in Canada would have to be divulge their compensation. And but his fellow conservative MPs killed that one, or at least gutted it. I think they moved it up to something like $350,000. So again, so only the extremely most compensated employees would get anything. So we're going to have someone from the Canadian Taxpayers Federation to discuss what is going on there. His name is Nick Bergamini. Apparently, there's been a mix up with the communication, but we will get him back on. And in the rest of the show, we have an incredible lineup. We've got Heather Torkelson, who has moved from Canada to Lima, Peru. And the key article or insight that drew me towards her work was one about basically ignoring what I call busybody advice, or just everybody seems to have advice for other people, and often it conflicts with the advice of others, so you know you've got to make a decision at some point. But basically, her key point is that at the end of the day, you've got to make the decision, and if you want a more adventurous or different life, that means you're going to have to basically reject a lot of the advice that people are giving to you. And so I want to discuss that more with her. So that's Heather Torkelson. After that, there's a lady who has gained YouTube fame for giving a valedictorian speech and calling basically government education a form of indoctrination, and basically just putting us on the conveyor belt, ridiculing the fallacies involved with conventional education. And that's fine. I really want to hear her perspective. Now, her YouTube video has got almost a million hits, so very popular. And so when she comes on in the final hour, we'll be discussing what her insights have been since that, what motivated her to make that speech, and what insights she's observed since. Since I think it's been about 3 or 4 years since she made that speech, and she's been traveling and blogging about her experiences since. And then finally, Mark Skousen of Freedom Fest, we're discussing, is the U.S. Rome? And his upcoming event, Freedom Fest, which is in Las Vegas each year. It's one of the biggest pro-liberty gatherings, and I'm really pleased to have him on to discuss why he's chosen that theme and what will be going on there. I've been alerted that Nick, our planned guest from the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, is not available. There's some kind of emergency has arisen, but we have another guest on the line from that organization, which is great. So his name is Corey. I'll get his full name. I'll say that even though I don't live in Canada anymore, I still get the Canadian Taxpayers Federation updates. I still consider their work valuable. And so if you are looking for a group in Canada that does great research, that is a watchdog, and will inform you as to what is most important, perhaps, as to what is going on It's just taxpayer.com. And we have man Corey, I'm going to get his last name once we get on, to discuss the situation, which drew particular interest to me, of government employees not having transparent salaries. And a lot of other dirt has arisen actually recently. So, Corey, if you wouldn't mind sharing your name and position with the Taxpayers Federation, that'd be greatly appreciated.
Hi, thanks Corey. For having us on. My name is Corey Schroeder. I'm a research assistant here at the Canadian Taxpayers Federation.
Right. And do you want to just give people a little bit of an outline as to what the Canadian Taxpayers Federation does and whether you've had any success in recent times?
Like you were, the little intro you gave us there, we're basically a mix of a research organization, a watchdog group, an advocacy group. You probably heard of the Fraser Institute, AIM,
of course,
Institute of Market Studies in Canada, in Halifax. They're really research focused. And I feel that we're a mix of research and advocacy, which I feel plays really well, especially, with dealing, with, government waste and accountability and transparency in Ottawa. That's basically what we do, is research and advocacy.
Just as a bit of background, I actually worked with the Atlantic Institute for Market Studies in Halifax for a while, and I published a bunch of articles with the Frontier Center on the Prairie. So I am familiar with – that's how I came across the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. I can't remember when, but I'm almost certain I would have noted your work at some point in time. Now, the article I linked to on the Facebook page was titled "Dismayed Conservatives Address News of Edmonton MP's Resignation from Caucus." So this member of the – is it called the Progressive Conservatives or the Conservatives Coalition? What is the party that's in power right now in Canada?
The Conservative Party of Canada.
Just Conservative Party. Okay. Now, one of their MPs said, "I'm not so happy about what is going on," and he introduced a bill to make at least the higher paid government employees make their compensation publicly available. Why is it not already publicly available?
That's a question I think everybody, the Frontier Center, Ames, Fraser, the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, even, the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives, everybody has been asking, why aren't these salaries public? And I think, it has to do with self-interest. I think, there may be strategic decisions behind it, from the PMO, they may say, we don't want this coming out because it's another way people can criticize us. You're kind of shutting off doors so you can safeguard yourself a bit better.
Corey, I'm going to ask you to hold the thought. We have to, we're tight against the first break. We'll get the entire next segment to discuss. So stay with us, folks. This is the Stateless Man on the Overseas Radio Network.
Your website is a major doorway to reach new clients. A dynamic web presence will generate you more leads and business. AMTG Solutions offers premium web design and digital media services for today's small businesses and entrepreneurs. Visit our website at amtgs.com or email Tony at info@amtgs.com and let's get the ball rolling.
Welcome back to The Stateless Man, pursuing liberty beyond borders. We're speaking with Corey of the Canadian Taxpayer Federation. He's a research assistant filling in for our planned guest, who was Nick Bergamini, but who's had a family emergency. So the topic we're discussing is basically, in my view, a brazen and embarrassing lack of accountability in Canadian government, where basically the government salaries are not publicly available, and I can hardly believe this. So we've got this guy on to explain what is going on and why this bill failed. So Corey, if I might bring you back on to explain, so right now it seems like they just don't want people to know, but that seems just absolutely unacceptable that you can't work out what your public employees or supposed public servants are getting paid. What is what is happening about this? I mean, Julian explained the story that one Conservative MP from Edmonton, Alberta, introduced a bill to somewhat give some transparency to this, but then his very own members gutted it.
So the MP who actually moved Bill C-461, his name is Brent Rathgeber. So Member of Parliament for Edmonton, St. Albert, I believe. And basically what he wanted was all salaries at $188,000 above and above to be disclosed to the public. I don't think in the bill it even said that these things would be released online. It's just that they're now applicable, or they're now covered under the Access to Information and Privacy Act. Myself, people in the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, people all around the country would have to file these access to information requests to even get that information, the job description and the salaries. And what happened was in this committee, the Standing Committee on Ethics and Transparency, Commons, what happened was the Conservative MPs basically said, well, no, they moved an amendment at the last meeting, actually. I think it was on June 6th. And they said, well, here's actually, this is going to happen. We're going to move up $319,000, which covers, I mean, we don't even know a number because that's not public information, but I mean, that's a very, very small number.
Yeah, sure.
Of so, I mean.
And was it moved once one more time? I thought I saw somewhere something like $390,000. So has that number been going back and forth?
Well, no, what it is the media in Canada, the National Post, Globe and Mail, CBC, the Toronto Star, to name some of the big ones, have reported the number of 440,000. And what they actually did was, so under the deputy minister pay scales, there's also a percentage amount of bonus pay you're eligible to receive. So you can receive, with this pay scale at DM4, 36% of your salary as an extra bonus. So what the media has been reporting is the $319,000 salary base plus the 36% bonus, which would equal $440,000. The more appropriate number is $319,000 because not everybody's going to get a 36% bonus. So,
I see. Right, and the irony, the reason why this article caught my attention as well is the immense capacity for hypocrisy and doublespeak among the people involved in gutting this bill, because they would say, we support transparency. Everyone knows what's going on here. Obviously, they don't, and people do not know how much people are getting paid. That's the whole point. And then when the one MP has the courage to actually stand for this, he's basically forced to stand down because there's no place for him in this party. His own party members are going against it. How are all these supposed conservatives getting away with this?
I mean, I think what Brent Rathgeber did was a very good thing, an honorable thing, that shows that there's still people of character and of good moral authority on the Hill. I think that, I mean, he had to make a statement. He had to show the Conservative Party and anybody else who would disagree with what is seemingly a very harmless bill that, you know, only allows us to see their job description and salary yet.
Only very well paid members of the government as well. So not just anybody.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, Brent Rathgeber actually wanted it at $160,000 initially because that's what MPs get paid. He said, well, anybody who's an MP or, you know, over should disclose salaries. And he thought it would be more salient, politically salient, to have it at $188,000. And I guess that clearly wasn't the case.
Sure. I'll tell you, by comparison, when I was working as a reporter in Louisiana, every single public employee in the state, his salary was available online in an easily searchable manner. And it did not cause riots in the street. There were no problems. It just was a normal part of life there that you just knew what people were getting paid. So I'm just kind of shocked as the fact that these people have been so brazen to kill this bill. Let me read just a quote here from one of the conservative government whip. Gordon O'Connor disagreed, saying, Rathgeber would have to explain himself. We are open and transparent, quote. We provide all the financial information. Every day we explain what we're doing. We have announcements here all the time. There are no secrets going on. People know what's going on in government. Has this man faced a backlash for such comments?
Well, he should. First of all, we don't know what people in government get paid, whether, you know, it's a contractor getting paid $10 to install a chalkboard, or if it's a deputy minister or a senior bureaucrat.
So basically, across the board, does this apply at the provincial level too?
Each province has their own jurisdiction. So, I mean, if you look at Nova Scotia, where I'm from, they have fairly liberal, and I mean small L liberal, access to information and privacy laws. It's usually easy to get information from them. They have a sunshine list, so anybody who makes over $100,000 is their salaries disclosed online, easily accessible. Ontario has the same thing, $100,000. Manitoba has one for $50,000.
Let me sort of back up then. For people who are not in Canada who are taking a look at this, what should they read into this episode? You know, what does this tell people about the state of government in Canada?
I think it speaks, and this is probably harder for people who are not familiar with Canadian politics to understand, but it's more of a federal government issue, right? And I think it just speaks to the secretive nature of the government, the federal government. I think that people should, take a close look at that and, think about why they're doing that. Think about the reasons behind it. And I find if you always examine every possible reason, every possible cause for any action, you usually get you can usually come up with the best answer, the best solution, or the why they're doing that.
It could just be right. So basically, you're saying that Canada has a secretive federal government. Surprise. What about people who put hope in either the two prominent parties changing things? Is that just a dream nowadays?
I don't think. I think there's always hope. As cliche as it is to say, there's always people in each party who stick to their principles. There's people in the Conservative Party, whether they be backbenchers or ministers, there are a few of them, who probably would in any other environment support these bills. Same thing in the Liberal Party. I mean, I don't know if you heard, but Justin Trudeau is going to be, forcing all of his MPs, everybody in his party, to disclose all of their expenses every quarter starting this fall. So, I mean,
right.
you see change
for
the Liberals, and I think the Conservatives are going to start, they're going to take, small steps towards that direction, I feel, especially if the Liberals are doing it. They don't want to lose that moral authority, the rhetoric they had on transparency and accountability.
Right. Well, Corey, we are nearing the bottom of the half hour. I could not find your profile on the taxpad.com website, but do you want to tell me your full name and the best way to go for people to follow your work?
Just Corey Schroeder, so S-C-H-R-U-D-E-R. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is
okay. We're really tight on the brakes. I'm going to get the producer to get that from you. Stay with us, folks. This is the Stateless Man on Overseas Radio Network.
Are you a fluent English speaker? Get paid to teach English around the world. With 1 billion people learning English, there are 250,000 teachers and nearly 100,000 new jobs a year. International TEFL Academy, based out of Chicago, trains over 1,200 new teachers a year in TEFL certification. Visit radioita.com or call 773-634-9900 to request a free brochure. That's radioita.com. Mention Stateless Man this month and receive a $50 discount.
From China's Great Wall to the Leaning Tower of Pisa, this is the Overseas Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Stateless Man, pursuing liberty beyond borders. That's international living, financial independence, and personal sovereignty. And this week, I'm going to switch gears a lot right now. I will say that the past guest Corey Schroeder with the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. You can follow his Twitter at Corey Schroeder, which is C-H-R-U-D-E-R. I've just posted that on the Facebook page if you want to check that one out, and it's just at S-C-H-R-U-D-E-R-B-I. But, yeah, the best place to go is to facebook.com/thestatelessman, and you can see his Twitter just below the I post a link to the live broadcast, and below it I put all the updates as we proceed, and that one is right there right now. Now, the article that drew me to my next guest is titled All the Advice I Ignored, and I'm sure anybody who wants to do something a bit different or unique with his or her life has come across this theme where people will poo-poo your ideas. Are you crazy? You know, that'll never work. And you can't start a business, or you need a job, and blah, blah, blah. Well, one lady, Heather Torkelson, that's T-H Torkelson, heathertorkelson.com, has written an article about, quote, yeah, all the advice I ignored, and how she has had these incredible experiences, and she's a great role model for Stateless Man followers, how she lives now down in Lima, Peru. And I think she's from Canada, if I read her bio correctly. I don't think it was explicit on that. But I was just thinking, man, that's great. And people, I think, often get sidetracked or distracted by kind of just getting through daily life and forgetting what their real dreams are. And one way to sort of clear yourself and get to those goals is to basically clear away the kind of like advice, which often is conflicting or just getting in the way of you getting there. So she's a personal coach or life coach. I'm not sure how many people use those, but it seems to be that's her role down in Lima, and I think she assists with a whole variety of ventures. Now, Heather, welcome to The Stateless Man.
Thank you very much for having me on, Fergus.
Right. Now, I see, yeah, the blog component of your site has actually lots of articles that we could discuss. Like I said, the one that drew my attention, I think, through Twitter is the All the Advice I Ignored. And, yeah, so some advice, you said you ignored a lot of advice. Some of it you wish you had accepted. Let me back up. What motivated you to write this article, and do you just ignore advice as a way of life?
yeah, in a manner of speaking, yes, I do. That's only because the majority of people who dole out advice, they're not living the lifestyle that I want to live, so... You know, why would I listen to the advice of people who aren't doing what I want to do?
Right. That is true. And I don't understand exactly, I'm not sure what makes you different. So what do you think, has there been any experience in your life that has said, well, actually that advice was just dumb and I should basically think more for myself? Was there an inflection point or a threshold point?
That's a good question. I think part of it is that I had a fairly unconventional upbringing, and I moved abroad with my family when I was 14 for the first time. So after I got a taste of sort of a different lifestyle than what everyone back in Canada was doing, I realized that there was so much more out there for me. So it kind of ruined me in the sense that, you know, when I was expected to go to college and then get a job, and all this kind of stuff, I thought, no, I know that there's more out there, so I don't really see the value in listening to all these people who are telling me to play it safe.
That is one problem, too. It's very hard to kind of go back. Once you've lived a more adventurous life, just being, I don't know, subdued seems almost unconscionable. So let me go through some of the advice that you ignored. You should not drop out of university and go to work in Japan. That'll be the end of your academic career. Once you make decent money, you'll never come back. Is that sort of true, basically? So, but why is that a bad thing? I don't understand.
Well, no, actually it didn't. So the interesting thing, and that actually really ticked me off. All of the people that I was working with at the time were like, oh, you'll never come back. And the thing is that I really value, education. I'm huge into learning. So I knew.
Sure.
Knew that I was going to come back and finish my university degree. You know, that was like majorly important to me. So these people telling me like, this is what's going to happen to you. You know, you'll go there and you'll never come back, blah, blah, blah. Sorry. Yeah.
No, but I don't understand. Why was the university degree so important to you?
Well, just because at that point in my life, I thought that that was sort of a basic jumping off point for whatever I would want to do professionally. You know, I knew I wanted to work internationally, and you kind of need a university degree to get a decent job abroad. So that I knew, knew I was going to come back. But, you know, it didn't stop me. Like in my mind, moving abroad didn't mean the end of all education. And everyone was telling me otherwise. Everyone was trying to tell me what my life was going to end up like. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to go have this experience abroad. Then I'm going to come back, get my education, and then go from there. Like I just, it was my idea to put pause on my education and not listen to what everyone else was telling me, this sort of black hole that I was going to fall down and never come out of, you know, like I never let anyone else dictate how I saw my future.
Yeah, that's interesting. You described this advice people give, because often I wonder, why do they care? You know, it's not their life. And the other irony too is that I suspect almost the motivation for advice often is not for your own benefit, but for them to feel more comfortable. Like, because when you go and live a different life, it's almost destabilizing for their own view of the world, that maybe I am living a boring life and maybe I should be doing something too. And
absolutely.
I'll say that, in my own view, I don't want to go to university in New Zealand where I'm from. I did 4 years in Boston, and I'm looking to go to Switzerland. So the idea that you have to do it in your home country is constraining my way of thinking as well. Okay, so and the second one was, you should arrange a job and housing ahead of time. There are lots of great services that set you up over there. Is this regarding Japan again?
Yeah, that was sort of at the beginning of that chapter of my life, and everyone was telling me, you know, this is the way you're supposed to do it, and this is the way that it's easy, and blah blah blah, and all this kind of thing. And I just thought, that doesn't resonate with me at all. Like, I'm sure maybe that's what would make you comfortable, but I don't want the restrictions of having to go on someone else's dime and live where someone else tells me to live. Like, I really wanted the freedom to figure out my own journey, you know. And so all of the advice that was being given to me was based on other people's worldview. And that just doesn't really fly, you know?
Sure, sure. Well, now you are working in personal coaching. Is that not advice to some degree? Explain what exactly that you do in that role.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm a trained life coach. I'm a certified life coach. But what I do primarily is I help entrepreneurs start their businesses. And there's a real overlap between business strategy and the sort of mental challenges that you need to move through at the beginning of doing something that, for all intents and purposes, doesn't have a lot of security, you know, like there's no guaranteed paycheck. There's no guarantee of clients, whatever. So I do a lot of life coaching as the backup support behind my business coaching. But it's not advice, because essentially what I do is I guide people through their own decision-making processes. So they make their decisions, they kind of move forward as they need to, but I use a lot of really crafty questions and stuff to open up the doors and question the shoulds and the beliefs and what other people are telling them, and get them to figure out what their own version of truth is.
Right. And I will say that sometimes I think this is more necessary than people realize. I've sought out mentors. That's what I call it in my life, for people who basically go and meet with and discuss my goals, and just a form of accountability, because it's easy to just let go, you could say, of your own goals if no one else knows about them or is monitoring them. So it's just I think there is value there. I guess the reason why I asked you is that I don't want to be a busybody. You know, I don't want to give people advice. However, we do each have our own form of expertise. And that's why you're an expert on, you could say, breaking out of the mold and living in Peru now, or outside of the regular life. And so many of us want to learn how you did that. I mean, when I heard, for example, that you were living in Lima right by the beach, I was thinking, you know, I wouldn't mind that either. You know, so Lippo, we have to go take a break. Stay tuned to The Stateless Man on Overseas Radio Network.
My name is Jacob Hornberger. I'm president of the Future of Freedom Foundation, which Congressman Ron Paul awarded for having an outstanding freedom website. Write us at fff@fff.org, and we'll send you a free 3-month subscription to our monthly journal of libertarian essays and our booklet, Economic Liberty in the Constitution, which George Mason University economics professor Walter Williams praised in a recent column. That's fff@fff.org.
Well, Welcome back to The Stateless Man, and I'm broadcasting live from Fusa Gasugar in just south of Bogota in Colombia. This town apparently has no native English speakers, and it's about 100,000 people, so I'm right in the middle of great Spanish immersion. But yeah, we're speaking with Heather Torkelson, and I was just kind of like directing the discussion towards, you could say, the fact that she has disobeyed the advice we all receive in our life. She's disobeyed it, and that has opened the door to many incredible experiences, including the fact that she now bases herself right by the beach in Lima, Peru, which is a great spot. And I will say that southern Peru is one of my favorite places to go. It's desert, but just beaches forever. And I really like it there. I bussed right throughout Peru a few years back and would love to go back again. So, actually, yeah, let's just go through a few of these experiences that you've been able to achieve by, you could say, ignoring advice. Did you actually get to the peak of Mount Everest?
No, I just went to base camp, but I might go back.
Right, and you've been to Antarctica as well, correct?
I have been to Antarctica, yeah, and I'm going to be going back to Antarctica because I loved it so much. I actually have plans for the coming season.
Yeah, some of us think, how does one even get to Antarctica? I mean, what? It's just out of left field.
You have to go on an expedition ship. That's the primary way to get there. You go to the southernmost tip of South America, and you get on an expedition ship and cross the Drake Passage, which is pretty hairy.
What do you mean, pretty hairy? Just very, very rough?
It's one of the most tumultuous bodies of water on the planet. So you can get some insane, like, 15-foot waves just tossing your boat around like a cork.
Well, right, and let's look back now. All those people who you could say rejected your decisions or thought they were a bad idea, today have they come back and perhaps apologized, but said, "Well, you did much better than we expected." Has anyone sort of like reflected and actually accepted that their advice was incorrect?
Absolutely. In fact, I mean, it's been long enough now, and I've done enough things that's exactly what's happened. You know, this is now the sixth country outside of Canada that I've lived in, and I'm 34, I'm not that old. So I've been, you know, I've lived in a lot of different places. I've always done things, as far as I remember, my way. There's a lot less naysayers now, which is why the blog post that I wrote was actually based on what happened to me or what I did 14 years ago, when people still kind of like to try to boss me around a little bit. But these days, people say the opposite. They're like, "Oh my gosh, how do you do it? Like, you have such an amazing life. You live this way that I wish I could live." And, you know, so now, I mean, I make my living based on helping people figure out how they can find their own version of location independence and business freedom and whatnot.
Right. And I remember one time I was hitchhiking through Nova Scotia in Canada, and I stopped in for lunch somewhere. And I was chatting with a couple at the table next to me, and they were telling me that they were on their 2-week vacation for the year. And I thought, 2 weeks? This is when I guess I've hardly had a full-time job in my life, but I just thought, how do you live like that? And it was as though they didn't know any other way. They just thought, well, that's just the way it is. And I'm going, it doesn't have to be that way. What are you talking about? And
that's true. And people still say to me, I could never do that. You know, people still say that to me. They're like, I could never do what you do. And I always respond to them, it's a choice. And that's all it is. It's a choice. It's not that you can't. It's that you choose not to.
And one of the challenges I think people have is that when you enter that 9-to-5 kind of boring or conventional life, I mean, I'm not, you know, but people like it fine. I don't want to do it. But if people want to do it, I mean, that's their choice. But basically, you mix with other people who live that way too. You almost become oblivious to the fact that a very large and growing segment of the population like you are finding a way out of it. And you don't have to do it, but because they're not your friends, you don't really know. And I remember one time this hit me when I was at university in New Zealand, and someone who I think was maybe 16 was going to university. I was going, "What? How do you do that?" And they go, "Well, I didn't really go to school. I was homeschooled. I just did alternative education." And it just never really occurred to me that you could do that.
Yeah. You make an excellent point, actually. And, you know, one of my favorite sort of truths about the universe are that you're largely a sum at any given point in your life of the five people that you spend the most time with or the five people that you're most exposed to. So if your five closest people are all people who live a life just like you, then how are you ever going to know what's on the other side of the fence, you know? And in fairness, like, I did work a corporate job for 7 years. I worked in big pharma, for crying out loud, which is like the furthest thing from what I do now. And it was really, you know, restrictive. And I worked with people who all they wanted to do was just make more money, make more money, make more money, buy more things, stay in one place and take their two weeks of vacation every year, you know? And so when I left, I always knew that that was temporary. And when I left that job, my greatest challenge was, what on earth do I do? Like, as much as I had lived overseas and experienced all this stuff, I didn't know from a professional perspective how I could possibly make a living for myself that would allow me the freedom that I wanted. So I think that a lot of people who are stuck in that space that wish more for themselves, they just can't even see what's possible. And that's a shame. You know, I certainly was in that place.
Yeah, I'll say too, a few months back, one of the listeners to the show emailed me and we ended up meeting up in North Carolina and we just happened to be in the same place. And he was debating whether to leave university or do something else because he was hating it. And I was saying that it's great to dismiss, you get to the conventional way of life, but if you don't have an alternative plan, you know, you've just been up broke. So you can't just be lazy about it. You've got to actually think this through and, you know, like have an alternative way of making money or whatever it may be. And there are obviously ways to do that, but just poo-pooing the regular way of life without some sort of alternative, that's the recipe for a problem. Now, why did you end up – actually, I should just mention the website is – HeatherTorkelson.com, and if you go to facebook.com/thestatelessman, I've posted her article, and you can get through to her site from that point. How did you end up deciding on Lima, Peru?
Good question. Well, I had lived in Costa Rica as a teenager, and then Mexico later on, and I always really loved Latin America. It has a really close place in my heart. I spent a lot of time traveling here when I was younger. And so when I've been with my partner, Sean, for 10 years. And when we first got together, one of the first things that we said is, in terms of long-term plans, is we have to relocate back to South America. And that was when we were living in Toronto. So we knew we were going to end up somewhere down here. And it was kind of just like a question of quality of life more than anything. You know, we knew all of the major cities of Latin America. We had, between the two of us, we had spent lots of time in both of, and you know, in the variety of different places. And Lima just came out on top in terms of, you know, cuisine, arts, being close to the ocean, being close to the mountains. Like, it's just such a great jumping off point. So we thought, hey, you know, let's just try it. And if we don't like it, we'll move. So...
Right.
You know, yeah. That's one of the good things about being location independent.
Right. And I'll say, too, I share that same sentiment for Latin America. Many people on this network are looking at Latin America. I say, you know, come and basically come and experience it for yourself. And I will say, too, one of the key advantages, in my view, particularly if you're making an income as you are online, is just the cost of living is so much lower. And
yes.
I posted an image on the Stateless Man page of a great meal I had here for which would cost $2.60 US, and people just can hardly believe it. I don't know how they make any money out of it, to be honest. But basically, that's just the key advantage to me, that if you are making an income online, why not find a lower cost of living? Now, the challenges associated with immigration status, I don't know how you've overcome those, but I guess, I mean, do you want to give any insights as to whether that played into your decision as to Peru as opposed to other Latin American countries?
Not really, because my business is based in Canada and probably always will be. So for me, I have the flexibility of being able to live anywhere where I can stay indefinitely on a tourist visa, because essentially I'm just, you know, I'm squatting in the country that I'm in, spending money that I've earned outside of the country in their economy. So you know, Peru happens to be very, very friendly to foreigners in that way.
That's interesting. So they give you a 6-month tourist visa. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you can get a 3-month or a 6-month. And, you know, I travel enough that I'm leaving the country fairly often and coming back in. And I just keep getting 6 months.
That is great.
And they're totally cool with that. And I know there are a number of Latin American countries who have a similar policy. So it hasn't been a problem for me at all.
Gotcha. Right, and so what is next? You could say the frontier of the HeatherTorkelson.com. I mean, I imagine this is an evolving project, and your blog is titled The Republic of Freedom. What do you plan to do next with this project? Have you reached a point of basically, like, you can say...
The connection was just
cutting in and out there. Discontinue if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. So I run adventure reboot trips twice a year. I take people to really awesome places like Iceland and Peru's Sacred Valley. And so I'm going to expand my offerings in that respect to try to kind of get people out of their regular comfort zone. But the Republic of Freedom is really what I'm trying to grow, this concept that I've got my blog under. I want to create a community where people can actually help each other and share more resources about not just, but really kind of.
Ryan, I'm not sure whether the connection, the problem is on my end or your end, but I'm really losing a lot of that call. Now, we've been speaking with HeatherTorkelson.com. Heather Torkelson of HeatherTorkelson.com, and the article is All the Advice I Ignored About Overcoming. Everyone seems to have advice for you, whether it's accurate or not, depends upon whether you want to emulate those people. And that's why I had a hard time in getting conventional school, because I didn't really want it to be like my teachers. I wanted to find successful businessmen or travelers, entrepreneurs, whatever alternatives there were, but I didn't find them in school. And so basically she is a life coach, and how people get out of the conventional grind. I'm not sure whether she's hearing me again, just a line cut out there, but Heather, I'll say I appreciate your work, and I want to see more people doing what you're doing. And I personally am going to be looking into these 6-month visas, because I'd love to come back to Colombia. So, but stay with us. This is The Stateless Man. Welcome back to the second hour of The Stateless Man. We're pursuing Liberty Beyond Borders, and the sponsor of this hour is the AMTG Solutions. That's AMTGS.com for your digital media and web development needs. And yeah, the previous guest was Heather Torkelson. And like I said, she's got plenty of ideas for breaking out of the regular mold of life, which many of us are, you know, eager to do. And she's happened to find her way to Lima, Peru, which I guess is well located if you want to travel to other parts of Latin America as well. It's a very sort of central place with an international airport. So it also has, yeah, the beach nearby, which she mentions on her blog. So I encourage people to check out her blog, which is the Republic of Freedom. And she's being a role model. And one of the interesting aspects of her story was the way that initially, when she wanted to do crazy things like go to Antarctica and go to the base camp in Mount Everest, people just sought to dissuade her. And I think many of us face this. When you want to live a life a bit different, it's unsettling. It's unsettling to many people that to their web life, and they will persuade you against it or dissuade you. She says that now more and more people are accepting they're accepting, and not only accepting her way of life, but wanting to embrace it and learn from her. Now, we're seeking to get on Erica Goldson. She is of fame because she gave a valedictorian speech, which I didn't know what valedictorian meant until I came to the United States. It basically means that the academic high achiever of high school gets to give a speech when people are going through the graduation. And she used such strong language describing conventional education as indoctrination, part of the conveyor belt of life, just going on to a boring, passive existence, just memorization rather than any sort of creativity. And it really touched on a spot that many people agree with it. Many people must agree because, like I said, it's got nearly 1 million views. And she then went on to go blogging and traveling, and I guess taking a different approach to life, trying to break out of that mold and look back in. So we're seeking to line her up right now. We've had some difficulties with the communications, but I've got the producer lining that up. If you want to check out her video, it is on the Facebook page, just facebook.com/thestatelessman. Just scroll down there. And I also put it out through Twitter, @thestatelessman. And this is just something that I relate to greatly, that I wrote my article on the books that influenced my life in the way that all 10 of them did not come from my conventional education, and that now I'm not in any sort of conventional education system, but I'm learning at an enormous rate. Most notably, I'm learning Spanish rapidly. I'm here in Colombia in Fasugasuga, this town of about 100,000 people, which apparently has zero native English speakers in the entire town, which is just perfect, obviously. And my thought now, people learning a language at university just seems absolutely crazy. I can't believe people would shell out so much cash where you can come and have a great time and learn so much more rapidly through immersion. And that's just language. There's so many other ways you can apply this. And I think conventional education, it's really so outdated. Many misguided assumptions go into it. So, for example, the way we receive university degrees is basically based upon the time that you sit down on your butt and hang around for 4 years. Well, why are these degrees, if they're conveying some sort of skill or capacity, why don't they just test you upon that skill or capacity and just have proficiency tests, and then you receive a certain level, as you would, let's say, right now, I'm preparing to do the DELE Spanish exam, which affirms a certain level of proficiency of Spanish. They don't require a certain amount of study. They just test you. What is your level? It seems like a simpler and enormously much more effective way to go. But of course, people who are in education do not like that idea because it would ruffle the status quo, and the people who gain enormously from it. There's a huge flow of money towards education, particularly higher education, where the fees, the money flung into it is just astronomical and out of control. The student debt in the United States has now exceeded $1 trillion, which is just, in my view, insane. And only about 60% of people even graduate within 6 years. So around half of people don't graduate in time. And so what are they doing with all that money that they've put down the drain? So in many cases, it's much worse than that. So I think there's just a huge amount of room for, you could say, a contrarian take on that. Now, I'm going to seek to confirm with the producer whether we've got our guest online. Like I said, we're working with Erica Goldston, and her Facebook page is about, well, she describes herself as the author of Here I Stand, or you might know me as Valedictorian Speaks Out Against Schooling. So that is the video that she produced, or the speech she did. Valedictorian Speaks Out Against Schooling, because of such a, you could say, monotonous or uniform way to approach education, when the fact is we all have such immense different interests. And I, in particular, just like the previous guest, Heather Torkelson, I greatly value education. I think it's important. I mean, you know, life is a learning process, and we have curiosities. Pursue them. I mean, I think I just love it. And the bit that amazes me now, I'll just speak about the language learning that I'm going through, is the way that during school, I hated language classes, just hated it with a vengeance. I had to do French classes to graduate from college, but it was just the most painful experience ever. I got the worst grades in those classes. And now I love it. I love the fact that I am here in Colombia learning every day, and not because someone forced me to, but because I want to. Now, so I just think that there is great room there. And if you want to get a sense for how the enormous, just enormous wasted time in conventional education, take a listen to last week's show. Go to The Stateless Man and go down to the podcast from last week under archives, or just down on the main page, College by 12. Mona Lisa Harding was on explaining to people how she has 10 children. The first six have already gone to college by 12 years old. If she can do it, you can too. She said it's not got nothing to do with genetics. It is just a different approach. Following your interests, amazing. Rather than dictating, just letting children follow their curiosities, and they'll learn at an immense pace. So I encourage you to follow that example. We're going to seek to get Erica on for the next segment. This is The Stateless Man.
It is said that liberty is the only thing you cannot have unless you are willing to give it to others. Do you believe in and want to spread the message of liberty to a younger generation around the world? The Language of Liberty Institute does just that, with camps in developing countries such as Albania, Nigeria, Armenia, and Mozambique. If you want to learn more about this powerful and growing initiative to sponsor, attend, or even become one of the teachers, visit our website at languageofliberty.org to learn more. You can subscribe to email updates or like our Facebook page to follow our activities.
What do you think? So there's been a problem. Like you said, you did well. Well, given that you did so well, why did you see the problem and others have not?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it that's a really good question. It could come down to many different experiences. It could be not just my home life, but also my school life, the certain teachers I encountered, even certain people I encountered. A German foreign exchange student was somewhat of an inspiration when he told me that the science that we were learning in 10th grade was actually, it was something that he had learned in 6th grade, you know. So it made me feel like, well, if I'm good at this science that he already knew in 6th grade, then am I really even that smart? So that kind of started a little bit of questioning right there. And also, I didn't realize it, but I was actually growing up in a pretty unorthodox home, I suppose.
Sure.
Both of my parents were from downstate New York, but I was growing up in upstate New York, more of a rural area.
Okay.
So they had different views that they were spreading to me without me really knowing, me being conscious of it. And even, yeah, I mentioned her in my speech, one English teacher that I had known ever since my 9th grade study hall. And then I had her for 10th grade, and then I kept in contact with her, and we actually became friends. And I really admired her, and I admired her passion for teaching. It actually felt like she really wanted to be there, and she really wanted to help her students. And I saw that distinction. So I started to understand, oh, maybe this is what every teacher should be like, you know?
Sure, sure. And then, so after you gave that speech, which was, 3 years ago, you went basically touring for a year or two. What did you find on your travels, and where did you go?
Well, I'm still kind of touring. I haven't been able to settle yet. I went right after I left high school. I decided that I needed to experience something that was the complete opposite of the mainstream. So I went down to Mineral, Virginia, and I stayed at an intentional community for a month, and I understood what cooperative living was like, organic farming, all that hippie stuff. And after that, I went to University at Buffalo to try it out. I met a lot of upperclassmen and tried to experience as much social life as I could to see where I would be in a couple of years if I had stayed there. And I still felt like, no, this isn't right. I need to be on the road. I need to be experiencing life more than just the classroom. And I was so lucky because of this speech, an unschooling mom, and what was really interested in having me on the unschool bus. They converted a school bus home, and we're traveling across country. So I flew down, met them in New Orleans, traveled with them for 2 months into Texas, into Austin. I also was able to speak at different conferences. So I was flown up to Minnesota, and I've also been flown down to Brazil. But there are also some things that I've done that have been totally unrelated to the speech, like the intentional community. And also I decided to go to New Jersey, right outside New York City, to meet with a friend of a friend, and we got along really well, and I stayed there for a few months. Then I decided, okay, I'm kind of bored of this. Now I'm going to go try something new. So I would just do an internet search for work exchange opportunities in different places. And
okay, well, then now may I ask, do you want to be an educator?
Well, that question's so interesting to me because the way I define educator is very open, so I feel like I'm an educator in my daily life, even though I'm not officially in a classroom or in a building. Like, I view life as the classroom. I view myself as a student and an educator at the same time. So every conversation, every interaction, I'm learning and I'm teaching. And I think the world would be a very different place if we all viewed life like that. Actually, recently, so I'm in Albuquerque, New Mexico right now. Most of my travels have been throughout the United States. They did go down to Central America for a little bit. I've been to other countries during my youth, but they were just like week trips, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And I've learned that I really like to immerse myself in a culture, really get to know the people, really be part of the community. And so now that I'm in Albuquerque, New Mexico, I've been really wanting to be an ESL tutor.
Right.
Well, maybe an ESL teacher in the future, but right now I'm just starting off as a tutor. So I go to the community program, the Coalition for Literacy here, and I took a tutor training, and I'll be getting my first student very soon. So that's kind of more of a formal structure that I'll be experiencing, where because I do realize that not every type of learning can be so chaotic, like, you know, daily life, you just have a conversation. Some things really do need to be structured, like learning English.
Sure.
So I'm glad that I can also do that as well. But it makes me realize that we don't necessarily need public schools for learning. We can actually just have community programs, such as this tutoring program.
Yeah, much more targeted. I mean, you know, you probably heard at the top of the hour, if you're listening, that the International TEFL Academy is one of the sponsors of the show. And you can become qualified to teach English all around the world, I think, in about two months or even less. So if people want to check that out, it's radioita.com. Like I said, they're a sponsor of this program, and they do great work facilitating that. We are at the bottom of the half hour, and I've got another guest lined up, so I'm going to look to reconnect with the network if I can. Yeah, you know that I really appreciated that speech, and I hope that you keep in touch with the program. And I'm not sure, where are you writing now? Do you have a new blog?
I do have a blog. It's a private blog. I guess I did feel like it was uncomfortable to have so many people know about my personal life.
Right.
But I'm always open to talking to new people. If anyone wants to send me an email, ericagoldson@gmail.com. Anyone wants to look me up on Facebook, ask me what I'm doing, my current status, my current views, because they're always changing. I'm so happy to have a conversation with someone.
Right, that's excellent. I will post a link to her Facebook page on my Facebook page, The Stateless Man, which is facebook.com/The Stateless Man. Otherwise, Erica, keep up your great work, and I look forward to being in touch, okay?
Thank you so much.
Right on. This is The Stateless Man, pursuing liberty beyond borders, and I'm pleased to be broadcasting from Fusagasugá, a name which I'm still getting my head around in Colombia, about an hour out of Bogota. And I'm pleased to have a repeat guest. This man is Mark Skousen. He's been on the show before. He is the author of many books. The one which is of most interest to me was Investing in One Lesson. You could say modeled after the notion of economics in one lesson. And he is the founder, organizer of the Freedom Fest, one of the world's largest, if not the largest, libertarian events each year. That is in Las Vegas, and he is here to explain why he's got that event going, and the theme of it, which is Are We Rome? You know, the manifestations of the United States that match those of ancient Rome, or the downfall of Rome. So, Mark, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
My pleasure.
Right, so you did choose We Are Rome. Do you want to explain? I mean, many of us are not that even. I mean, this is perhaps a symptom of poor education. But what aspects of ancient Rome or the downfall of Rome model those of the United States at this point in time? What motivated you to make that connection in terms of Are We Rome as the theme?
Well, first of all, by moving to Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas, we thought it was certainly appropriate to select that theme, Are We Rome? And let me emphasize that it is a question mark. It is not meant to be a statement, a fact.
Sure.
It's going to be a topic that we're going to debate, and we've brought together dozens of experts. We even have a professor of history who focuses on that time period of Greece and Rome, ancient Greece and Rome, to make sure that we're making accurate statements, because any comparison with something that occurred thousands of years ago is not going to always be an accurate comparison. But the great powers over the years, the empires, have gone through this cycle of a rise and a fall, a decline and a fall or a collapse. And we've seen that with Greece and Rome, and we've seen it with China and Egypt, and even the issue of Great Britain as an example of an empire that has been in decline, certainly didn't collapse at all. So perhaps we're going to, you know, are we Great Britain might be a accurate form as well. But really, if you look at the various aspects of what caused Rome to rise and the strength of a central government that was powerful enough under Caesar Augustus would be really the pinnacle of a man who turned a country from concrete to marble, as he would like to put it, and established order, established the Roman law, free trade in very large areas. So it's similar in that respect like we did with the Constitution, except he was a benevolent dictator rather than a republic that the United States was able to establish. So there's some differences right there in that respect. But Rome did suffer from expansionary power, wars that engaged in. Of course, it got a lot of revenue from the plundering that it engaged in, but then had an excessively large state, an expensive state, a welfare system that turned out to be expensive, and so they had to excessive spending led to higher taxes. It led to inflation. It led to regulation. And so you can see the similarities there that brought down Rome could actually occur in the United States, because we're going through that as well. We're going through a debasement of our currency. We're going through higher and higher taxes. We have a welfare system that's out of control. And so, you know, there's a lot of things there that could suggest that maybe not a collapse in America, but certainly a decline, a fall, if you will.
Right. I will say, well, firstly, we should note the website is just freedomfest.com.
Correct.
Now, just this week, a website that I follow, or a Facebook page that I follow, amandabellyrock.com, she put up a one of these image memes from you, actually, and it said, quote, "Taxation is the price we pay for failing to build a civilized society. The higher the tax level, the greater the failure. A centrally planned totalitarian state represents a complete defeat for the civilized world, while a totally voluntary society represents its ultimate success." Is that an accurate quote from you?
Yes, that's from a pamphlet that I've written called Persuasion versus Force, and people can get that on the web at my mskousen.com website, or they can just Google it, at Persuasion versus Force, and up that will pop. Now, I'm basically responding to Oliver Wendell Holmes' statement that's on the building of the IRS building, taxation is the price we pay for civilization or civilized society. And I was taking exception to that because that statement by Oliver Wendell Holmes suggests that the higher the tax rate, the greater we're going to have more civilization. And I'm taking just the opposite tack, and I'm actually basing it on a statement that was originally made by Plato that made the argument that if you look around, if a country has been able to achieve its goals by persuasion rather than force, then that is the true sign of a civilized society. And so the more persuasion we can engage in to persuade people to do the right thing rather than forcing them through taxation or regulation, then the better off our world will be. And, you know, it does kind of lend itself to this stateless society that you're talking about, although I am a limited government, laissez-faire type of advocate.
Right. I'll just put a note there that it's true that the show's title is The Stateless Man, but there are many different ways to use that term. Many people use the term stateless to describe not having any citizenship or not being of any nationality. Others use it to mean anarcho-libertarianism. I use it in the sense that when I say that I'm stateless or that I advocate for statelessness, I mean that giving up allegiances to nationality, because right now we can debate on forever about what the ideal world would be, but we happen to have a world before us. That's just the way it is, and you can respond to it in different ways. You can give loyalty to nations. You can engage in the political process. You can do a whole variety of things. I advocate, like Harry Brown did, that's one of the key, you could say, bases for the show, is Harry Brown's book, How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World. They basically don't accept the notion that because you happen to be born somewhere that you owe allegiance to any of the rulers of that area or that you are supposed to obey those people or anything like that. You pursue the life that you want given the context that you face. And one of those contexts that we do face is the fact that the American Empire is struggling or maybe coming to an end, as you were describing, and perhaps it won't be a boom like many people want to advocate with more doomsday type prophecies. It'll be more just a petering out, a bit like the British Empire. Either way, I mean, I don't think it makes that much difference. You've got to assess what your best prospects are. Now, I know you have remained in the United States. But while many other, you could say, old gold bugs or libertarian investors have departed, like Doug Casey and, let me think, the Dollar Vigilante guy, Jeff Berwick.
Jeff Berwick.
Right.
Yeah, we have both Doug and Jeff, again, coming to our Freedom Fest. Bobby Casey is another one. There's a number of them there who are coming and speaking. And I should tell you that Freedom Fest is very sympathetic with what you just said about being almost a citizen of the world rather than this. We try to eschew this nationalistic fervor. When you come to Freedom Fest, we do not have a pledge of allegiance. We do not have the singing of the national anthem. We do not have the American flag there. And in fact, I should tell you a funny story. We had a very ex-Marine saying, the only reason I'll come to Freedom Fest is you have an American flag posted there. And I said, well, I don't know. We'll see what we can do. And he came to the conference with the understanding there would be an American flag. And he came into the big hallway, and he couldn't find it anywhere. And he came up and he says, I'm demanding a refund. No American flag. And I said, well, sir, if you go to Newsmax in the exhibit hall, they have an American flag posted in the in their exhibit. And so we do have an American flag. It's just not us.
So we're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned to The Stateless Man, and we'll be right back. This is The Stateless Man, and we're speaking with Mark Skousen, a man of many ventures. Probably the most prominent is Freedom Fest. It's freedomfest.com. And the theme of this year's event is Are We Rome? He's also been president of the Foundation for Economic Education. He's authored a book which I'm familiar with, which is Investing in One Lesson. So he's produced a lot of great content over the years. And as he mentioned, at the event Freedom Fest, the theme of this show is basically very much in line, that they don't promote this sort of sacrificial nationalism or patriotism, which distracts us from getting on with being free people and gives more power to government, really, because once you start believing that, you'll be more likely to support the draft or national service or whatever it may be, which are violations of our freedom. Now, what has been the evolution of Freedom Fest over the years? When did you start it, and how has it evolved to the more prominent event that it has become today?
Well, it really started in 2001 when I was made president of FE. It was the country's first real major free market think tank. I thought, you know, we're all a bunch of herd of cats. Isn't it time we had a national convention of freedom lovers? So that's really the origin of that. And our very first conference, it's always been in Las Vegas because it's the entertainment capital of the world. It's a very, it has that image of laissez-faire that we really like.
Sure.
Because you're able to find the best in entertainment and food and stuff. I like the new Las Vegas, but if you want gambling, if you want the sex shows, if you want to, you know, have a really big fun time, you can do that too. It's very much in keeping with the spirit of liberty to make your own choice of what your form of entertainment is. And we're bringing an intellectual feast to a very fun town. So that was my original intent. We had a very good turnout the first year, 850 people. Unfortunately, I didn't last as president of FEE. I was not a very good fundraiser, and
sure.
We had some differences. So I moved on, but I decided to keep Freedom Fest and run it myself, and so this will be our eighth or ninth year. There were a couple of years where we didn't do anything, but this is our, you know, we have over 1,700 people have already signed up, and I should mention that we are for-profit. We think that concentrates the mind on the customer rather than ourselves, and we're not in competition with all the free market think tanks and the nonprofit organizations out there. So and actually I see Freedom Fest as not really my conference. Yeah, I'm the producer of it, but it's really our conference. The idea is a national or even international. Let's call it an international or world conference of freedom lovers. And we define that very generally so that we have people across the political spectrum who come. We try to avoid labels. We don't like this left-right dichotomy that you see all the time where we accuse people, we demonize people. We treat everyone as an individual, and we look at their policies, are they good or bad, rather than are they left or right. So I think we've been quite successful, and we're going to have over 2,000 people there this year. So lots of people. I mean, it's created a lot of buzz, and we're even thinking of doing a live streaming. We haven't really decided whether to do that or not, and it won't cover all the conference, because the idea is to get together once a year, physically, get together to learn, to network, to socialize, to celebrate liberty and what's left of it. And we have plenty of opportunity in these podcasts, and we all have our own different type of things that we're doing. But if we can come together once a year, I really think that we can reverse this trend of our loss of freedom if we're recognized as a force. I think there is strength in numbers. If you go to freedomfest.com, you'll read some incredible quotations from people who have been to Freedom Fest and how it's changed their lives in a very meaningful way to re-energize their spirits about the cause of liberty.
Right. Oh, there are a few things I want to add there. One is that I first came into contact with this event or heard about it through one of the debates that got onto YouTube. I'm not sure whether they all get on there, but it was one about basically, you could say, interventionism versus non-interventionism. With Doug Casey and Ron Paul versus Dinesh D'Souza and some other man, I can't remember right now.
Yeah, Larry Abraham.
Exactly, yes. And I just thought many of us, I mean, it's changed for me now because I've taken so much alternative media, but many of us just don't see such a clash of ideas in public that some, like you said, most of this media debate is confined to this silly left-right dichotomy. And that I think, confines our minds too. So I think there is enormous value there. And my understanding is that there's a lot, let's say, most people at the event are already converted. And there's more of a, you could say, how to actually be a free person, which is what, you know, many of the listeners to this show are very much interested in as well. Like you said, expatriation or investment or whatever it may be. I imagine all the stalls there are a variety. Now, but let me bring you back to that statement you made about taxation represents basically a failure of ours to create a civil society or a peaceful society. Why do you think, I mean, this is a broader question, I know, and you've got time to answer, but why do you think, you could say, the American Republic has failed to a large degree, that taxation is going up, regulation is going up, everything seems to be going in the wrong direction? I will say that on the one hand, I do see a flowering of, you could say, a liberty movement, even though it's a minority, and that gives me great hope. But to a large degree, as you've identified, the trappings of empire have really come home to the United States, and I'm not really sure how to explain that. You know, is the idea of a republic just a failure?
Well, I do think that you're seeing this in a number of, like, the Economic Freedom Index shows the United States in decline.
Right.
While the other parts of the world are, many of them are increasing in
yes.
economic freedom. I was really kind of surprised that index, they have a kind of a global index, and it really hasn't declined that much. It's just declined in certain countries like the United States.
Mm.
So, yes, it is a sign of failure. I actually think that when President Obama or whoever's president, they have to sign some legislation like Obamacare or what have you, that they should have sackcloth and ashes on because and should be depressed. They shouldn't be smiling, oh, look, we passed this great piece of legislation. It's a sign of failure. It's a sign that we could not come to an agreement to persuade our voluntary institutions to solve whatever problem it is, whether it's gun control, not gun control, but violence. Okay, the problem is violence. How do we solve this problem?
Mm.
Do we engage in some form of persuasion to teach people to be behave better, to avoid mental illness that seems to plague these people, just go out and start shooting people? Or do we improve our prisons to try to work with them? It seems like we're just too quick to pass another law to somehow sweep the problem under the rug, and we've solved that problem. You talk about major issues that our various countries face. How do we deal with these issues? Do we simply run to the legislature to force people to do the right thing? To use guns in a inappropriate manner, or do we say, it seems like we're dealing with the symptoms and not the fundamental causes. I have this argument on abortion as well. Well, we could pass a law. Abortion is a great crime against the innocent who haven't been born.
Sure.
So what is our solution? Well, let's just pass a law prohibiting abortion. Well, how about going into more of the real root causes and talk about the irresponsible behavior of people when it comes to sex and to relationships? Why don't we focus on that rather than the result of an illicit activity?
Actually, I will say that I'm really sympathetic to that line of reasoning, Mark, because I have been, and I don't mind saying on the show, an advocate, a pro-life advocate for many years. But I once, I seek to read the books of people who have take the opposite or get the ideas of people who oppose me, right, oppose my views. And one of the most compelling arguments is that in countries where abortion is illegal, there's very little difference in the actual rate of abortion to countries where it's legal. Particularly in Latin America, where many countries do have abortion illegal, it is still very prevalent. So I think you're right that we really have to actually work harder. It's kind of, like you said, it's almost a lazy response to just say, we'll just make it illegal and that'll solve the problems. So
yeah, we've solved that problem. Let's move on to something else.
Exactly. And of course, that's not the case. And that we're falling for that trap of you could say, of the statist ideal that we can solve things with government. Now, okay, so the event is coming up in, I've got the website up here. So the website is freedomfest.com. And it's July 10th to 13th, so just a month away, Caesars Palace,
yeah,
Las Vegas.
Las Vegas.
Right, you
yep.
can register online. I really appreciate your work, Mark, and I remember meeting you down in New Orleans. I hope I get back to the New Orleans Investment Conference sometime soon. So thanks for coming on The Stateless Man, and I will be in touch, okay?
Great, thank you very much.
Right on.